Even in the age of email, if you were fortunate enough to receive a Valentine today, odds are it was written on paper rather than in pixels. In fact, as our linguist Jeff Nunberg observes, the history of Valentine's Day as an American holiday has always been intimately connected with our postal system.
When a new communication system is introduced, it can take a while to grasp its implications. When Thomas Edison invented his improved telephone receiver in 1877, he thought it would become a medium for broadcasting concerts and plays to remote auditoriums. For 25 years after radio was developed at the end of the 19th century, people chiefly regarded it as a means of ship-to-shore communication. And then there's the U.S. postal system. For the first half century after its founding, its main function was to circulate newspapers to a national audience. Not that you couldn't send letters, too, but the rates were much higher than for periodicals. In 1840, sending a letter from Boston to Richmond cost 25 cents a sheet, at a time when the average laborer made 75 cents a day. In fact, the postal inspectors were always on the lookout for people who sent each other newspapers at the cheaper rate and added coded personal messages by putting pinpricks in certain letters. That all changed in 1845, when Congress enacted the first in a series of laws that sharply reduced the cost of sending letters. The new rates led to a vast surge in personal correspondence. They set up a communications revolution that the historian David Henken has chronicled in an engaging new book called The Postal Age. The cheaper postage didn't simply enable Americans to keep in touch with one another in what was becoming the most mobile society on Earth. It was also used by businesses who made mass mailings of circulars and by swindlers who sent out letters promoting get-rich-quick schemes. People sent each other portraits of themselves made with a recently developed daguerreotype process. They sent seeds and sprigs to distant friends and family eager for the smells of home. And, oh yes, they also sent valentines. St. Valentine's Day was an ancient European holiday, of course. Back in England, people drew lots to divine their future mates and exchanged love notes and poetry. But before the 1840s, Puritan Americans almost completely disregarded the holiday, like the other saints' days of the Old World. But the drop in postal rates set off what contemporaries described as a Valentine mania. By the late 1850s, Americans were buying 3 million ready-made Valentines every year, paying anything from a penny to several hundred dollars for elaborate affairs adorned with gold rings or precious stones. People sent cards to numerous objects of their affection, often taking advantage of the possibilities for anonymity that the mail provided. That was alarming to moralists who worried that the postal system in general promoted promiscuity, illicit assignations, and the distribution of pornography. Actually, they weren't entirely wrong about that. But fully half the Valentine's traffic consisted of comic or insulting cards that people sent anonymously to annoying neighbors or unpopular schoolmasters. By the time the Valentine craze tapered off a few decades later, people were sending each other cards for Christmas, Easter, and on their birthdays, as the greeting card became a fixture of American life. In a lot of ways, the development of email has followed the same course that the postal system did. For one thing, the implications of the new system weren't clearly understood at first. The first email software was designed for sending files and programs over a network. And once email and other forms of electronic communication became widely available, they were rapidly adapted to almost all the purposes that cheap mail had served. Email has ushered in a new age of personal correspondence, but it's also facilitated swindles, junk mail, pornography, and anonymous hookups and erotic connections. In short, email's used for just about everything that delighted and troubled people about the postal system in the mid-19th century. But following on the heels of cheap long-distance rates, email put the final kibosh on the personal letter. Nowadays, the only personal messages that most people will regularly go to the trouble of putting in the post are the ones that serve a ritual function, like thank you notes, letters of condolence, or greeting cards. True, you can send a Valentine electronically, and some sites will even allow you to do it anonymously, though you might want to think long and hard about plighting your troth to anybody stupid enough to open the attachment on an anonymous email. But for most of us, those kinds of messages can't do their magical work if they don't physically originate with a sender. It's like getting an electronic postcard from friends who are visiting Turkey. It may be nice to hear from them, but you're not going to print it out and stick it on your refrigerator door. Those remaining postal rituals are a vestigial sign of the allure that letters once exerted on the American imagination. In fact, letter is about the only word for correspondence that has resisted digitization. We talk about email and electronic notes and messages, but sending somebody a letter still means putting a piece of paper in an envelope. It's true that nowadays, the only pieces of paper we can expect to find in our mailboxes that still bear a handwritten signature were generally printed by Hallmark. But maybe it's appropriate that the cards that signal the opening of the postal age should be among its last remnants as it draws to a close.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley. His recent book on the language of politics is called Talking Right.